It is currently 1:04 p.m., Tuesday, March 15, 2016. Members present, we have Representatives Clayman, Representative Ortiz, Co-Chair Representative Hughes, and Representative Stutes. Today, we will be hearing a presentation from Sarah Williamson on the regulation of recreational drone piloting. And seeing how drones are the topic of today, I would also like to do a little housekeeping on a resolution we had before us a little over a month ago. Representative Hughes, do I have a motion?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move that the House Transportation Committee rescind their action on House Concurrent Resolution 17, version 29-LS1327/H.
Okay, and I will object for the purpose of discussion here. And Representative Hughes, if you could explain the CS.
And I'd like to call my staff, if I may, up, Representative Foster, Ginger Blaisdell. And I also want to mention that this is somewhat of a good learning experience for us because, and as a reminder, because we were doing things at the last minute, we ran into technical problems, and that's why getting amendments in 24 hours in advance is the better way to go. So I just thought I'd mention that. But Ginger can explain why we needed to rescind the action and what where we're going.
We're going to take a really quick at ease. We could go ahead and have you introduce yourself for the record, and please proceed.
For the record, my name is Ginger Blaisdell. I'm staff to Representative Hughes. And about a month ago, the committee adopted version H of HCR 17 with two separate amendments. One amendment was changing the words aviation to unmanned aircraft systems, and that was on the bottom of page 1, lines 13 and 15. And it was adding a reference to the economic data that's stated in the resolution, and that's on page 2 at the end of line 1, and then adding lines 2 and 3. The second amendment that the committee offered to version H was called copies, and normally you would list where you want copies to go, copies of the resolution. And that's the amendment that caused a little bit of issue with the legislative legal drafting. It would have changed the status of a concurrent resolution to a joint resolution because we selected people outside of state government to receive copies. And what we decided is that the task force can easily send copies to any individuals that they felt appropriate.
Okay, do we have any questions of the committee?
It's more just a procedural. So what are we doing? Undoing the Second Amendment and keeping the First Amendment? Is that essentially what we're doing by our action today?
Do you want me to describe it? Through the chair, Representative Clayman, what we're doing is legal drafting had such difficulty trying to figure out how to put the Second Amendment in. It has never been drafted. So I believe the action the committee is going to do is just rescind your previous actions, which removes everything back to the original version H, and there's a new version E that is the correct version.
Okay. And version E is here in front of us?
Yes.
You want to get him version E?
3 pages back.
Okay.
Yeah, and then maybe he hasn't. So right now, let's do the rescinding. Is there no further question?
Yeah, I
never know. Mm-hmm. Okay. Just want to give everybody a moment to be able to file the papers here. Take your time.
May I make a comment while we're...
Sure, Representative Pierce.
Hopefully this will help clarify things for you, Representative Clayman.
Who's got it?
Okay, you got it? Okay.
Yep. Never mind.
Okay, does anybody else have any other questions of Ginger? Okay, seeing none, I am going to remove my objection Are there any further objections? Seeing no objections, the committee substitute for House Concurrent Resolution 17 is adopted, and I'll entertain a motion to move the CS.
It was rescinded.
It is. We're back on the record here. So we didn't have any objections. I am going to restate that. Seeing no objection, the action in passing the House Concurrent Resolution 17, Support Aviation Industry, Use State Land, Version 29-LS1327/H, out of committee has been rescinded. And with that, we now have HCR 17 back before us. So, we could have a motion to adopt the CS.
Yes, Mr. Chair, I move that the House Transportation Committee adopt the committee substitute for HCR 17 version 29-LS1327/E.
Okay, and I will object again for the purpose of discussion. And Ginger, were you going to add any more comments?
If you'd like me to quickly go through it again. On page 1, the change in version E, on line 13, it now states unmanned aircraft systems rather than aviation industry. And on line 15, again, it replaces the word aviation with unmanned aircraft systems. And on page 2, beginning at the end of line 1, we added, as identified in the McDowell Group's May 2013 report for the Alaska Center for Unmanned Aircraft Systems Integration at the University of Alaska Fairbanks. And that's just the reference to where we got the economic data for the resolution. And those are the changes.
Okay. Are there any questions from the committee?
I don't have a question, but I'll just reiterate what Ginger said earlier. The task force will be happy to send copies to the FAA, to the industry association, and to our federal delegation as well. Just we have the flexibility to do that, and we're happy to do that, even though it's not mentioned that in the resolution itself anymore.
Okay, real good. I am going to remove my objection. Are there any further objections? Seeing no objections, the committee substitute for House Concurrent Resolution 17 is adopted, and I will entertain a motion to move the CS out of committee.
I move that the House Transportation Committee pass the committee substitute for House Concurrent Resolution 17, version 29-LS1327/E, out of committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal note.
Okay, and again, I've removed my objection. Are there any further objections before we move this? Seeing none, the committee substitute for House Concurrent Resolution 17, Support Aviation Industry, Use State Land, version 29-LS1327/E, with individual recommendations and attached zero fiscal note, has passed out of committee. So we'll take a short at ease just to sign the bill. Okay, and transportation is now back in order. We'll now be hearing the presentation from Sarah Williamson of the Duke Law School. And before that, I'd like to offer Representative Hughes to make some comments if she likes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have another committee meeting in a little bit, so I'm going to have to slip out. But I just want to thank Sarah Williamson for coming today. We connected in some of the drone work that I was doing, and I had actually met her a number of years ago when she was up here interning before she was in law school. She's a JD candidate, and because we don't have our own law school, my understanding is that the Duke Law School works with us in Alaska, working on the Alaska Law Review, and one of the topics she has chosen is drone liberty and privacy, and so it worked out very well. She was coming up to Alaska, and so we invited her to present some of what she's been learning. And I was actually having a conversation with someone yesterday, in fact, about, it's kind of funny because really the concerns with drone have less to do with the fact that it can go up in the air and more to do with the cameras that are attached. And when I look over at this camera over here on a tripod, it has wheels, but the Department of Transportation didn't really worry too much about that. However, with
drones, we have FAA very much involved, and it makes it much more complicated. And so I look forward to as much of her presentation as I can hear, and I just want to thank you again for coming today.
Thank you, Representative Hughes. And so, Sarah, if you could please introduce yourself for the record, and go ahead and begin.
Thank you, Mr. and Madam Co-Chairs, Committee Representatives. Thank you very much for your time today. My name for the record is Sarah Williamson. I'm a JV candidate at the Duke University School of Law. And as Representative Hughes mentioned, I'm an executive editor of the Alaska Law Review, which is a scholarly journal based out of Duke Law under contract with the Alaska Bar Association to study and publish on Alaskan legal issues. I have been conducting legal research to support the mission of the UAS Legislative Task Force under HCR 15 to identify potential privacy concerns associated with unmanned aircraft systems, or UAS, and to recommend to the legislature a comprehensive state policy for unmanned aircraft that protects privacy and allows the use of UAS for public and private applications. While the term drone has certainly captured the public debate, I will stick to the term UAS because, as defined by the FAA, these craft are indeed aircraft, no matter how small, and that does have legal implications, which I'll discuss in more detail. So I'll briefly present my research, and then I'll be happy to take any questions you might have. The task force has, next slide, okay. The task force has identified some citizen concerns and anxieties about private individuals using UAS to remotely invade their privacy, be it from harassment or stalking to trespass concerns. And so the scope of my research has therefore focused on legal implications arising specifically from recreational uses of UAS by private citizens that create privacy concerns. My research has addressed three key questions. First, do states actually have the authority to regulate recreational UAS uses that create privacy concerns? This is basically the issue of federal preemption of state law. My conclusion is that states most likely do have the authority to regulate in this area, which allows consideration of the next two questions, which are, what approaches have other states taken in response to UAS privacy concerns, and what can Alaska learn from that in the experiences of those other states in developing its own legislative response to this issue? Based on the policy goals that were identified in HCR 15 for the Legislative Task Force, the best options to respond to the identified concerns are going to be those that simultaneously embrace the variety of drone uses that could benefit Alaskans and the Alaskan economy while not over-regulating the fledgling technology, and also those approaches which maximize privacy protections while not necessarily impeding on beneficial, non-privacy violating uses of UAS. So now I'll move on to discuss my findings on these questions. So as I stated earlier, most states likely do have the authority to legislate in this area without the risk of federal preemption. This is a legal question that arises because Title 49 of the U.S. Code, Section 40103, declares that the U.S. government has exclusive sovereignty over the airspace of the United States. The power to regulate this airspace has, of course, been granted to the FAA. And prior to the widespread use of UAS, the FAA only regulated airspace 500 feet above ground level or higher. But now the FAA has claimed jurisdiction down to the blade of grass as part of an effort to develop a plan to safely integrate UAS into the national airspace, which it was directed to do under the FAA Modernization and Reform Act in 2012. However, in practice, the FAA has only claimed exclusive federal jurisdiction over air safety concerns as opposed to privacy concerns. And this is important because under this scheme, any state action that has anything to do with safety, which could include restrictions on flight paths, restrictions on altitude, equipment standards, licensing, education, those actions are going to be preempted by the federal government's action in this area. However, privacy is usually a concern within the state's broad police power, and so states have maintained the ability to act in this area in the past. States have also, several court cases support this. States have legislated in other areas beyond privacy that impact airlines, including taxing airlines, and they've also been able to regulate air advertising. So these are concerns that are traditionally left to the states, unlikely to be preempted by the FAA. Additionally, the FAA has made several statements directly stating or implying that it does not want to tackle privacy concerns and that states are the appropriate locus for such laws. It did this in a recent UAS fact sheet that it released, and it gave an example of a state voyeurism law as an appropriate piece of legislation to integrate UAS into. Additionally, the Congressional Bipartisan Privacy Caucus, which is about 40 members strong, also supports strong state privacy legislation. And the Modernization Act that I mentioned earlier also bars the FAA from regulation of small model aircraft, which are used for recreational purposes, and many scholars believe that model aircraft in that usage probably includes UAS and their recreational uses. However, there are some potential sticking points. The Electronic Privacy Information Center has sued the FAA, and it's before the D.C. Circuit Court now, to argue that the FAA must consider privacy in its rulemaking on UAS. However, this argument lost below, and they based it on a Congressional Research Service report that said that a plan to safely integrate UAS into the national airspace should not just mean safety, but should also mean privacy. But again, that argument lost in the court below. Also, the National Telecommunications and Information Administration, or NTIA, may have jurisdiction over privacy issues at the federal level, but to date, it has been occupied with only commercial uses of UAS, as opposed to those by private citizens. And it's developing, with representatives of key stakeholders, a voluntary best practice guide that's targeted solely towards commercial uses of these craft. So given the pace of progress in Washington and all of these things, it is likely safe for states to regulate in this area. And indeed, many states have. To date, 45 states have considered over 200 bills broadly relating to UAS use at the state level, including, of course, Alaska. 25 of those states have considered nearly 100 bills relating to the privacy implications of UAS use by private citizens. So I come to the second key question of the research, and that is, what approaches have these states taken? And the approaches have been quite literally all over the map. There's certainly no uniform bill that states are considering in the UAS area. However, they can be generally grouped into three categories. And these categories are common law approaches, or basically leave it to the courts to figure this out approaches, UAS-specific civil or criminal code approaches, and then approaches that integrate UAS into existing state privacy law. So now I'll review each approach in detail and its benefits and challenges. And my recommendation is that Alaska take the final approach, which is integration of UAS into existing state privacy legal structures. So, this slide, the common law approaches, this is an approach that doesn't necessarily require statutory language from the legislature. It leaves most of the burden of determining reasonable standards of UAS operation to the courts with an existing tort law. The state of Alaska recognizes three broad privacy torts. Those are intrusion upon seclusion, defamation, and false light. And the idea would be that courts would take these standards and essentially apply them in a new context to UAS uses that impinge on people's privacy. It's difficult to get a count of other states who have taken this approach simply because it does not require statutory language. So suits have been filed in some states, but not in others. States also recognize slightly different forms of these torts because it is common law. So they may have different standards. At least Connecticut and Illinois have considered cases in the privacy tort category, and 15 different state courts have heard cases in the property, the trespass and nuisance litigation category. But again, that litigation is occurring independently of legislative action in those states. And so this is one of the key weaknesses in solely relying on this common law approach. While enforcement of this approach well, it necessarily requires civil suits by harmed individuals, and not all individuals, you know, may have those resources. The approach is flexible because the common law is inherently flexible. Judges might have a lot of leeway to figure out how this best fits into current doctrine. However, it's not going to be a good approach for really developing a norm around the uses of UAS, because it's going to rely on specific cases with specific facts by individuals. And the remote piloting features of UAS also introduce accountability and attribution problems for citizens who are trying to identify precisely who or what is invading the space above their property. There also may be issues with trespass. Individuals may not intend to actually trespass, you know, because there are no fences in our airspace. So that's going to be something that will be very difficult to determine. These standards, the tort standards, are inherently based on reasonableness of actions. And so that's going to require citizens to do a lot of mental balancing of what their actions should be. And without a norm already developed around UAS, that's going to be difficult to expect citizens to do, especially where these value judgments aren't commonly held yet. And it will also be necessarily limited by people being unable to know the particular capabilities of any drone. It may have a camera or it may not. And the privacy violation might be, you know, greater or lesser depending on that. Under this approach, citizens might also be tempted to disable or capture drones on their property in self-defense rather than file a lawsuit. And this type of self-defense is actually currently prohibited by the FAA guidelines because, again, UAS are aircraft. And so interfering with an aircraft can then take that citizen who felt privacy harm and then subject them to very strict federal law on tampering with aircraft. So that would not be a desirable outcome of this. The privacy torts are also pretty rare creatures. I've included there some excerpts from Alaska Supreme Court cases that deal with those privacy torts. But the doctrine in most states, including Alaska, is rarely applied. So there's a lot of wiggle room. There's a lot of uncertainty as to how it might be applied specifically to UAS. So moving on to the next approach that states have taken, this is a UAS-specific civil and criminal code approach. And by this, I mean generally a comprehensive piece of legislation that's targeted very broadly at regulating UAS. I've given a few examples on the slide of states that have enacted such laws. And again, each one is different from the last. Texas's to date is the most comprehensive. It lays out 19 specific lawful uses and then some unlawful uses that are classified as misdemeanors. And they also allow citizens to recover civil damages in these cases as well. Idaho's current law is sort of similar to the general permissive approach that Alaska has taken in allowing UAS use. It allows UAS use to be generally lawful, except where it interferes with an owner's property or is imminently dangerous. However, it also prohibits gathering images or recordings of individuals or their property without explicit written consent beforehand. And this might be troublesome under the First Amendment, potentially opening that type of legislation up to challenge. Tennessee, on the other hand, is an example of a very narrow criminal code approach, making it a criminal offense to use footage captured by a UAS of a hunter or angler without their consent. And a couple other states have passed similar laws, and it appears to be in response to tactics used by PETA to harass hunters and fishers. So the benefits and challenges of these approaches, obviously these laws are very specific, which can be very good for creating a clear and consistent expectation of lawful behavior by the public. These laws are also directly responsive to a lot of citizen concerns, which is indicated by their very targeted nature. However, as I mentioned with the Idaho law, and many other states have similar provisions, this type of prohibition is likely unlawful under the First Amendment. federal circuit courts have been in widespread agreement that the First Amendment permits a private citizen to at least record the actions of people in a public space. And of course, it's unclear if piloting a UAS in a public space that is able to see over the fence into a private property, you know, that's going to be the litigation issue with UAS. But it is clear that viewing public people in public space is permissible, and so a law that requires written consent is likely not going to survive a challenge. Another challenge with this type of approach is that it's often duplicative of other state laws, namely the privacy laws. And so that can create challenges for the courts when they're interpreting the intent of the legislature. You know, are the same standards supposed to apply to the UAS, slightly different, very different? It just creates a consistency problem among the state statutes. And these specific laws are also likely to produce unintended consequences. For instance, you know, as I mentioned, what if someone were piloting a UAS on a public space and they happened to catch footage of a crime that was occurring on private property adjacent? That would be an unintended consequence of that would be unlawful. You also have, you know, issues where the standard of written consent, you know, might not be feasible for commercial operators, and so you'd get differences between what applies to recreational users and what applies to commercial users, which could impede beneficial uses of UAS. And finally, the final type of state approach is integration of UAS into existing state privacy law, and this is what I recommend for Alaska. Most prominently, California has taken this approach. It amended its paparazzi statutes to integrate the use of UAS to capture images as unlawful behavior. As you may know, the California governor has been very reluctant to create any standards for UAS so that there would not be overburdensome regulation, but even this was one that he did consider necessary and targeted enough at the specific troublesome behavior so as to not have too many unintended consequences that could harm the industry. Arkansas has also enacted a similar law, which integrates UAS-specific language into its voyeurism and video voyeurism statutes. And I've included here some of the Alaska statute provisions that could be surgically amended to prohibit UAS as a means through which to commit these offenses. The ones that I've included here focus on the state laws, again, already implicating a sense of privacy violation, but others could be included. One on the slide is the reckless operation of aircraft. That could be amended to specifically include small UAS. And even the definition of assault and battery, which is not necessarily a privacy concern, but it could be amended to include, you know, UAS to create fear of bodily harm and outlaw that as well. And so the benefits of this approach, they capture all of the benefits of the UAS-specific legislation, but they're much less duplicative. They integrate UAS into existing state law and existing standards and still send that clear message about what conduct is going to be acceptable. These provisions would not force citizens to rely on their own resources to bring a civil lawsuit, but would again be enforced by the police and by the Attorney General. Prohibiting UAS use in this fashion for specific offenses is also much less likely to have unintended consequences because such legislation, as I mentioned earlier, targets the undesirable behavior rather than the machine itself. The challenges under this approach, obviously it's going to require amendment of scattered sections of the code, but a complete survey should not be difficult, perhaps just time-consuming. And finally, there's potentially an interesting issue with the Alaska Constitution right to privacy. As that right has been interpreted by the Alaska Supreme Court, it may have some interesting intersections with the First Amendment and might somewhat ironically force the state to place a little bit more emphasis on the citizen's right to fly a UAS however he or she wishes within his within the backyard, no matter what the neighbor thinks. But again, in such a targeted approach as this would be, and again targeting the behavior, that would probably not be a huge issue. So that concludes my presentation, and I'm happy to take any questions you may have.
Thank you, Sarah. That's a lot of great information there. So are there any questions of the committee?
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Hughes or Ortiz?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Sarah, first of all, thank you for being here today. I really appreciate your presentation. In the very beginning slide, you talk about, or slide three, I guess it is, mm-hmm. the states have the authority to regulate recreational UAS conduct, which creates privacy concerns. So, in what we're talking about today, only deals with recreational and not commercial?
Correct.
Okay.
Go ahead.
And then, I guess, the follow-up. So, are the necessary safeguards in place, and do we have that not only deal with all that deal with privacy concerns as well as other concerns, are they already in place for commercial use of drones?
So the commercial is a bit different. There is some more action at the federal level as far as commercial uses of drones go. So that is going to be that it would be more likely for the state to run into preemption issues with action on commercial uses of UAS. So that's why I've sort of limited my focus to the recreational or hobbyist uses of drones, basically private citizens, you know, flying a UAS for whatever purpose they might have.
Thank you. A follow-up.
Sure. Representative Clinton.
So is your perception that the federal regulations pursuant to a Commerce Clause powers that the Congress is exercising?
I think it would be, yes. And they also appear, a lot of it is really based on the FAA's authority to regulate the national airspace, which, again, you know, could be tied back to the Commerce Clause, but yes, that's...
Do you think it ties back to something other than the Commerce Clause, or probably the Commerce Clause, at least in your research?
I mean, to some extent, it could be necessary and proper if that is sort of the basis for, you know, having one national airspace and then being able to have the power to make the necessary regulations to govern that.
Okay. A couple of other... follow-up, so that what the reason that the commercial regulation, you're seeing that as being taken more by the FAA and not by the states, but the recreational side, you're seeing that the FAA or the federal government is allowing room for the states to regulate.
So the difference is primarily with the action that's occurring at the NTIA. They are currently taking on commercial, they're making a voluntary set of best practices that will be, you know, not enforced because it's voluntary, but on commercial UAS uses. And those best practices are specifically about the privacy implications. And so while it's, while it's, again, not a not a mandatory, you know, thing to follow these best practices, there is action. There's also concern, I think, with the government, the federal government, for the commercial uses. There's a lot of concern by the press because they, of course, have that right to news gather, to gather information. And so a voluntary, you know, code of conduct approach is what they're really pushing for, so that to protect their sort of First Amendment right of news gathering. As far as, you know, state action on privacy with commercial uses, I think there would be similar concerns with, you know, wanting to have maybe a more voluntary approach. There are several, model aircraft associations who have always had, you know, codes of conduct or the like that their members abide by when they're flying the craft. And so that has been recommended as a possible approach at the state level. I haven't done as much research into those avenues because I've focused more on the recreational side.
And I think last thing, just I think that the question you raised about the Alaska constitutional right to privacy, which is our courts have recognized as a greater right to privacy than provided by the federal constitution, mm-hmm. that presents an interesting query, because is that a right to privacy to fly your drone wherever you wish, or is that more a right to privacy that relates to the home and the curtilage?
Right, and so I think you know, if you're talking about a citizen, you know, flying his drone in his backyard, that seems to be, you know, very much in line with how the courts have interpreted the privacy provision under the Raven line of cases. Mm-hmm. And so that activity, you know, whether or not it impinges on or creates a certain feeling of violation of privacy in the neighbor whose fence this user can now see over, that activity by that neighbor might be or by the user might be more protected, and sort of to the expense of the privacy right of the neighbor to not feel like they're being spied on with, you know, the camera that may or may not be on that user's UAS.
Actually, one more follow-up. But isn't there the issue of the constitutional right to privacy in the Constitution more about privacy from the government as opposed to privacy from your neighbor? I mean, I recognize that it isn't necessarily,
right.
If I'm sitting in the backyard throwing the ball with my dog,
yes.
The neighbor may or may not have any business to know that I'm doing that, but
right.
I'm not sure that constitutional right to privacy comes into play.
It is, and that's where there's interesting intersections with the Fourth Amendment as well. A lot of states have taken up the issue of, you know, police warrants and, you know, use of drones to, you know, fly over property. And yes, I think it is, in fact, a very interesting question and will be the tricky legal issue as states move forward in this, and specifically Alaska because of that provision in the Constitution.
Thank you. Okay. I've got a micro question and then a macro question.
Sure.
I guess going back to the micro one, you mentioned that there are severe consequences for tampering with an aircraft. FAA, of course, a very serious business when you do that. Everything from a jet on down to the little 172 that I own, and I understand that because if somebody messes with my airplane, it's a safety issue, obviously.
Right.
And I would expect that there's probably some very severe consequences. So is there a floor, like a minimum punishment? And because you had said that if my drone lands in your yard and you don't, like, you think I'm spying on you, so you take your foot and you stamp on it and
right.
bust it up. You know, they treat that drone, I think you said, similar to is what they do as an airplane. And so is there a minimum, I guess, punishment, or maybe you can talk about that a little more?
So I think that's going to be a topic that will likely be included in the FAA's regulations. They issued draft regulations in February of 2015, and they received a lot of comments about things that they didn't include, and I think that's going to be in there. One recent parallel that did come out, the registration issue, as of December 21st, I think, you know, users had to register their drones, and the penalty for not doing so was the same civil fine that is used for the penalty if you don't register your larger aircraft. So that's an example of them applying these standards that they have for, you know, what we traditionally think of as manned aircraft to the unmanned aircraft space.
So I guess regarding minimum punishments, like if, for example, somebody goes and pulls one of the cables on a spark plug in my airplane, it's, you know, somebody's going to get maybe, I don't know, a month in jail, or maybe. Is that, would that same thing apply if somebody crushes them? Currently, I'm asking Stanley,
currently,
I realize that you're looking forward.
Right. Based on the FAA's actions, I think that would essentially be, you know, what they would look at. I think a lot of people would take issue with that and say, you know, look, this same standard that applies to this should not be applied to UAS. And so that was, I think, some of the comments that the FAA received.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're addressing those, presumably.
Thank you. Then on my macro question, going back to your key questions page, and you had the three questions here, and you, what approach should Alaska take to increase privacy protections without precluding reasonable uses? And so maybe if you could talk a little more about that.
Sure.
Which direction should we go?
So this, again, you know, goes to the unintended consequences that I mentioned. And so my recommendation, again, for Alaska is to take that third approach that targets really the behavior that we don't want people using their drones for, like stalking, like harassment, and adding in a UAS-specific language in that statute. This would you know, again, target the behavior rather than the actual mechanism. Because if you target the mechanism itself, then there might be beneficial uses that, you know, aren't even known yet. And of course, you know, Alaska is one of the locations for one of the federal test sites. So, you know, wanting to be open to a lot of potential uses, the behavior is really the issue. And so that's why the final approach would be what I would recommend.
Okay. Do we have any further questions? Seeing no further questions, I appreciate this is a lot of very helpful information, and I appreciate you coming all the way from North Carolina, is that correct?
Yes.
To present this. So with that, we're going to go ahead and close out. Our next meeting will be a joint meeting with the Senate Transportation, where we'll be hearing a presentation by Google on driverless cars. This meeting will be in room 106 at 1 p.m. on Thursday, March 17. And with that, we'll be adjourned at 1:47 p.m. Thank you, everyone.